Hey Gearheads, and welcome to GT Garage Talk, a discussion about all things automotive. I am your host, Corey, and I am so excited about this week's episode because I've had two friends that came together to do their first ever Rebel Rally, each of them Rebel rookies. And this was their first experience competing in such an event. So for those of you unaware, the Rebel Rally is a 10-day navigational rally, all-female rally through the western U.S. Think California. We've got sand dunes and Glamis and just all kinds of different terrain. We've got freezing temperatures in the morning and 100-degree desert temperatures in the afternoon, all kinds of different challenges. The safety net of GPS and cell phones are removed, so it is an old-school style map and paper and compass navigational rally, you know, like they used to do. And just so much fun to get to see and follow along with my friends in Kristen Shaw and Jill Simonillo as I got to go along the journey with them as they prepped for it. I was there when they announced their partnership with Hyundai and the involvement of the Santa Cruz Sport Activity Vehicle, I believe is how Hyundai brands it, but basically a small truck, and got to see that. I got to see Jill's struggles with the supposedly easy to set up and tear down tent, but more on that as we get into the episode, and just get to see all the prep work that goes into it, and then to follow along with their experience and their journey, and now today to get to sit down with both of them and get their insights about what it was like living within this rally for 10 days in a new vehicle in a very new type of environment for both of them. I would like to welcome on Kristen Shaw and Jill Simonillo. Jill, Kristen, so amazing to catch back up with both of y'all. So great to have y'all back amongst civilization and have y'all here with us on the podcast. Kristen, Jill, how are y'all?
You start.
Alive, yes, very much so. So, Jill, I guess we'll start with you. Just we're having a little bit of audio issues on this end. So we'll start with your experience. This was your first time in the Rebel. You've seen it. You've covered it for years. But what was it like going and experiencing it for the first time?
Yeah, so it was exactly what I would thought it would be and not at all what I thought it would be. And the things that I thought were going to be a problem were not a problem. And the things that I was most afraid or, you know, that I thought wouldn't be a problem were actually the problem. So, what does that mean? So the first thing is people kept asking me what I was freaked out the most about. And I kept saying I'm freaked out about being cold. I hate being cold more than anything else. And so that was my biggest fear. But I probably overprepared a little bit for it because of that, because I bought a new jacket. I bought more layers. I bought battery-powered heated blankets, nice. Battery-powered heated mittens, battery-powered heated socks. I bought all of the battery-powered heated things. And everyone else has like these down skirts they bought. And I was like, that is amateur hour. Like, you need the battery-powered heated things. And so, like, when in the morning, like, you're up at 5 a.m. and it is still dark outside. So you have a headlamp on and lanterns that you're carrying around as you're trying to deal with maps and plot points, longitude and latitude. And you don't have access to your phone. Your GPS is not in your car. And so you're completely in the middle of the wilderness by yourself. And it's cold and dark. And I had these amazing heated mittens. And so I'd be like plotting these points. And then like my hands would get cold and I'd put on the heated mittens. They were immediately warm and life was lovely. And I could just tell everybody was looking at me with envy. And I'm like, next year, you too can have battery powered heated things. So that was my biggest fear going into it. And I figured, okay, navigation is going to be difficult. But it's not going to be the problem because it's logical, right? I mean, it's math. It's logical. You put points on a map. You go to the points on the map. However, I will tell you, trying to get to the freaking points on a map is not as easy as you would think it would be because what you think is a road is not a road. It's a river, or it's a power line, or it's a railroad track. And so you're looking at this itty-bitty map with a magnifying glass, or two. I think at one point we may have had three magnifying glasses, looking at, trying to figure out what where the bloomin' roads were. And so that was hard. And then it gets worse when you're in the middle of an open area with no roads. And you're trying to get around a sand dune or a mountain, and you're trying to figure out, okay, how do I need to go 73, you know, or 7.3 kilometers in 43 degrees. Okay, that's that way. You know, it's straight ahead, got exactly where I need to be. I've got, you know, I've eyeballed the point, you know, that there's a mountain that's marking where I need to go. But in between you and that point is another mountain or a sand dune or a big tree. And you go around the tree and you're like, wait a minute, where am I? So that ended up to be a little bit more of a challenge than what I anticipated. And, you know, reading maps is not as easy as you would think, at least not reading the Rubel maps.
Yeah. So, Kristen, same question to you. How did you feel your first Rubel experience went? And can you echo some of the same sentiments? To me, it sounds a whole lot like parenthood, being prepared and not prepared all at the same time.
Yeah, I think that it was so overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, there were points in time that so as Jill said, we swapped back and forth between driver and navigator. Mm-hmm. And on the first day that I navigated was actually day one. And the first plot point was a black diamond, which means it wasn't marked by anything. And I could not find it. And I had a moment of panic.
Yeah.
Like, did I do this right? I have no idea where we are. You know, and we had to take turns like being the calm one.
Yeah.
Because Jill said, okay, we're going to go back to where we were before and we're going to skip this one and we're going to move on to the next one. And that's what you had to do all day was make decisions. Mm. So we made a lot of good decisions. What we found was that we made really good decisions as a team and that we could support each other really well. People have asked me over and over again, are you still friends after all this togetherness after 8 days? I said, you know, I think we're stronger friends than ever.
Yep.
We really worked well together. I can't imagine doing this with anybody else.
Yeah. I would say that I have seen that not only just talking with y'all so far today, but in some of the other past participants that I've seen repeat teammates from this experience, that it's like one of those things you sign up to torture yourself all over again. I've had so many conversations with so many awesome people from this event in years past. And yes, and I can definitely tell there is a stronger bond between the two of y'all. Knowing y'all individually, but seeing y'all together has been a hoot.
It was unquestionably one of the hardest things I had ever done. When we got to the end, Jill said, I definitely want to do this again. I want to conquer this. You know, I want to do better. And I said, I just need to sit with this for a minute. You know, I just need to process this and think about it. And I miss my family so much. When I got home, it took me probably a day. And then I started dreaming about next year.
Yep.
I found myself thinking about what I would do differently. And I started thinking about, like, I have this weird thing where a song will pop up in my head, like, that gives me a message. Like, when I knew I was in love with my husband, when we were first dating, is when David Cassidy, I Think I Love You, was running through my head. I was like, oh, okay. So I had to figure that out.
So would you say it was more, and this will probably be a toss-up, more physically exhausting or mentally exhausting? Because you were setting up your tent every day, and you had all your gear, and sometimes you had to dig out of holes. But at the same point, like you said, you're constantly making decisions and having to work through things or find a way around that darn tree, as Jill pointed out.
For me, it was much more mentally taxing. I'm a marathon runner. And so endurance sports are familiar. And understanding that when you start, you can't see the finish line, that was also familiar. So that physically, like, I felt like I was in shape enough. I was prepared. But mentally, the curveballs, like, you don't know what to expect until it happens. And so your first marathon is the same way. Like, you don't know how you're going to feel when you get to mile 20 and you hit the wall. until you get to mile 20 and you hit the wall. It hurts.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, it really hurts. But, you know, having been through something like a marathon, I feel like that helped prep me to go through physically and mentally the Rebel. But it was for me very mentally taxing because of the curveballs that you kept encountering in terms of, all right, how do I navigate around this mountain? Mm-hmm. And Kristen and I had a lot of conversations before we went into Rebel about, well, how do you react when you're frustrated? How do you react when you're angry? Like, what happens when you're hangry or you need food? You know, and so we kind of like were prepped in that way. But even so, like, you're spending 24 hours a day mm-hmm. for 10 days with somebody you are not married to.
Yeah.
And there is a learning curve there. And while I understood that the learning curve would be there, and Kristen and I, you know, talked through a lot of the challenges, it took us a while to fall into a rhythm. And initially, it was, you know, just understanding that you really have to trust your partner and you have to talk to your partner. And I think at first we were both trying to make decisions without having some of the conversations. At least I know I was trying to make decisions without having conversations. And so once I realized we're better together and we're stronger together, that's, I think, when we really started to have more fun and we started to, I won't say be successful because we finished last, but we finished.
Right.
So it was successful. And I feel like once we started working together better and getting over the initial, I won't call it awkwardness, but just the learning phases, the learning curve, then I feel like we really started to get into a groove. And so I just know that when we do it again next year, like, we're going to hit the ground running.
Now, I need to clarify. Not come in last. Like, we were in the crossover category, which only had 7 or 8 out of 55 right. teams. We were last in our segment, but by 2%. And if you would have put us like in the overall rankings, we would have finished in the top half or the top 2/3,
yep.
you know, for, in terms of point collection.
Yeah.
So,
like, 5 teams, like 8 were crossovers. And of the 8 people who were crossovers, I think only 3 of us were rookies. And of the 3 of us who were rookies, I think 2 were maybe engineers of some sort. And then the other one was a rally car driver. We're just freaking journalists here.
Yes.
So I feel like we were at a disadvantage from the get-go. And the fact that we finished with such a high percentage of – because the way they calculate your score is the percentage of checkpoints that you achieve.
Right.
Points you get for your checkpoints, or the total score for your checkpoints. And we went into it knowing, okay, we'll get all the green, we'll try for some of the blues, and maybe we'll try for some of the blacks. But the people who were winning were getting all the greens, all the blues, and then most of the blacks.
Right.
And we, like, again, navigating around a mountain is hard. We weren't quite to that skill level yet, but we, if you looked at us in the overall score, that's a very good point, Kristen. We were actually middle to upper of the pack, and I'm really proud of how we did.
Yeah. Well, Kristen, what about you? Was it more a mental game or a physical game? What kind of weighed out? Because obviously it's challenging in both.
I say physically, it wasn't really that challenging to me physically. I wouldn't say I'm in like the greatest shape, but I'm not in bad shape.
Right.
And I didn't find anything particularly difficult physically. It was mostly mental,
yeah.
you know, because you'd have to get up at 5 in the morning and like be on, you know, with a cowbell would wake us up. You'd have to get right on it. And on day 7, actually, Jill woke up really early, like before the cowbell. And she's in the main tent, like plotting already at 5:30.
Nobody needs more cowbell. We'll just put that out there. But yeah, so 5:30.
No cowbell. Yeah, so 7 at 5:30. Somebody's like shaking my leg and Kristen, it's 5:30. You missed the cowbell. Jill had sent another driver who wasn't busy navigating over to get me because somehow I'd put my earplugs in and I was out cold. But what I would liken this to is like, you know how in Scooby-Doo or some other cartoon where the character falls into like one of those mine carts and they go flying down and suddenly they get switched over to a different track. And it's kind of like what it's like being on the Rebel Rally. You might end up on a path that is completely littered with rocks, and you're picking your way through to make sure you don't bust a tire and have mm-hmm. to take out your hydraulic jack in the middle of nowhere. You know, and things come up, and there's lots of curveballs, and it is an incredible mental game. And they call it a game, and that kind of helped me realize, you know, the fun part. It is a game, and it's a fun game, but it is really challenging in an incredible way.
So Jill kind of likened it to marathon running, and I appreciate the reference, and mentioning kind of that wall, which for different people, it's different things. It comes at different points. What would you say, well, Kristen, we'll start with you. What was kind of your wall that you hit? Was it that day one early freak out and you just kind of got it out of the way? Or was there something a little bit later on down the road that just kind of you needed a moment?
There was 2 points for me. And after day one, and things got a lot better, that after we missed that first point, like I settled down and we started, you know, nailing our checkpoints. But that night I said, if I had been a kid at summer camp, I would have called my parents and said, come pick me up.
Yeah.
I was so overwhelmed. The worst part was probably Thursday, day six. Or day, I guess, yeah, it was day six of the official rally, and we got to the dunes for the first time, and we went looking for a flag, and we could not find it, and it was so demoralizing. And what we found out was that the course director forgot to put that flag out.
Oh no!
And so, but we were just came away feeling like we were completely hopeless, and that that last day of being in the dunes was going to be terrible. It was such a feeling of dread, and I was so homesick for my family. Yeah. Like I just, the tears just came out and I could not stop them. And I was saying, Jill, it's not you. it's not, I didn't want her to think it was her or that I was frustrated with her. It's a lot. It's a lot to deal with without, you know, and being cut off from the rest of the world at the same time.
Yep.
But I had Jill, and she is an incredible support.
Probably why you slept so good or so long the next morning. It was just probably all of it culminating there. Jill, what would you say your wall was?
I mean, I would say my wall probably came pretty early because of the shock of what was difficult and what wasn't difficult. So, I mean, the first night we were at camp, it was like 32 degrees overnight. It was really flipping cold, and we're in a tent. And but my heated blanket saved the day. Yes. Darn it. But it was cold, but that wasn't the hard part, you know. And so I think once I got over the hump of what was hard and what wasn't hard, I navigated through the prologue day, and I felt like that went fairly okay. And then, you know, and what's ironic is I had problems. I think it was like checkpoint 7 or 8 on that day. I had problems finding that checkpoint. And then the first checkpoint the next day was in the same flipping area. And so like that area was just a Bermuda Triangle, you know, swirling vortex of bad juju. And so, you know, I feel like once I got over the first 2 days, you know, when I navigated and we couldn't find that point, and then the second day when Kristen navigated and she couldn't find the point in the same area, and I just realized, okay, this is the hard part. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the hard part. And I just kind of accepted it. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. You're in the middle of it at that point. Right. You can't call your parents and let them bring you home. You got 6 more days. I just started I can do anything for 6 more days. I can do anything for 5 more days. Mm-hmm. And that's the mantra I use while I'm running. I can do anything for, you know, 554 more minutes. I can do anything for, you know, whatever. So I can do anything for X amount of time because the finish line is going to be there. And so after the first 2 days, and I realized that this is 100% a marathon, maybe an ultra marathon, right, which by the way, I never want to do in my life.
Yeah.
But once I got over that mental hurdle, then I was just like, you know what, let's just enjoy this. Let's be on the journey. And it didn't, and I mean, there's also the fail safe. They take away your phone, they take away your GPS, but there's always the fail safe. We have a sat phone in the vehicle and you just know that if anything catastrophic happens, there is a lifeline. And so knowing that no matter what happens, you're not truly going to just fail. You know, there is help on the horizon. And in case, you know, something catastrophic did happen, Kristen purchased chest wound seals. So, you know, I felt pretty good about that. But and my doctor approved, by the way. But no, I mean, it's just you learn what's hard. You get over that hump. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is just like, OK, what can we learn from this? Yeah. And I feel like we learned a lot.
Yeah. You joke about breaking it down when running. I'm like, yes, I can do anything. It's this many more 1 minutes or this many more songs or this many more. Like you break it up into chunks and you say just a little bit at a time, just a little bit at a time.
So, just until the next water station.
Yes.
You just the next water station and then you can make it the decision to make it to the next water station. So it's like, okay, we'll make it to the next checkpoint. Then we'll make the decision to make it to the next checkpoint. And breaking it down that way, I to me was very mentally helpful. And again, like I feel like I probably hit my wall like after day one, mm-hmm. and then the rest was just a learning experience.
Yeah. So Jill, we'll kind of follow up with that. We've talked a little bit about how y'all swapped out. So historically, other past rally participants have had a dedicated driver and a dedicated navigator, and I know that there was conversation between the two of y'all just being your friends trying to figure out where that would fall, and y'all took a unique approach in swapping out. How would you say that worked, didn't work? Is it going to repeat itself next year, when next year, or maybe where did you feel your strengths were?
So Kristen and I are very well paired and well matched, I think, in that I call her the yin to my yang because, you know, where I am incredibly like the point is exactly right here in this spot, and I need to turn 90 degrees in 3 seconds to hit that. You know, Kristen's like, I think it's going to be by this tree over here. And when you know, and once I realized how amazing that combination is, mm-hmm. things started to go a lot better. Again, like after, and it wasn't on day two, by the way, it did take me a little bit longer than that to figure it out. But once I realized, you know, I can be as exactive as I want to be, but the road that I thought was going to be there mm-hmm. is still not there. but Kristen's tree is probably going to be there.
Right.
And so once we started to work together in that way, things got a lot easier and a lot more enjoyable. And so what I would say is both of us need to understand the navigation and both of us need to understand the driving. Because first off, you never know who's going to have a bad day. And one of the things I said to Kristen is both of us can't have a bad day on the same day. I said, so if you're having a bad day, dang it, I'm going to have a good day today. We'll just make it work that way. And so, you know, I mean, there food poisoning could happen. You know, there's somebody could get stung by an insect and have a reaction. So both people need to understand bad things just from that perspective. But again, things always work better when you can have a conversation. Like I've seen people who are dedicated navigators and dedicated drivers, and the navigator's like going to the driver, okay, hey, what do you think about this? And the driver's like, sure, just point me in a direction, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's not a conversation to me. Kristen and I had great conversations about, well, does this look like a road to you? That's a road, or that looks more like a power line. But if the driver doesn't understand what the symbol looks like, you mm-hmm. can't have that conversation. So I think we discovered that both of us knowing both things is incredibly helpful. But and Kristen can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think the other thing we discovered is that switching back and forth is also hard because you get into one groove and then the next day you have to get into another groove. Mm-hmm. So I think we've started having conversations about picking one dedicated thing next year. But again, you know, if my strong suit is navigating through enduro challenges and calling out checkpoints, hey, we've got to take a right at the bush, or we've got to take a left at the fork in the road. If I'm stronger at that, no matter whether I'm driving or navigating, like I should navigate through that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've started to have some of those kinds of conversations. So there may be times where, you know, I'm the navigator, but I would drive because Kristen's better at calling out directions or vice versa. So we've started those conversations, and I did actually offer up the idea of being the dedicated navigator next year. Cause I feel like it stresses me out a little bit less, but I don't know if we've made any official decisions.
Yeah. Kristen, what about you? What excited you about each different position?
Well, what we found when we met a lot of rookies this year, we made so many new friends as well, like some really amazing, incredible friends that are all rookies. And a lot of them switched back and forth. Okay. Now, some of them settled into a rhythm, but we found that it wasn't as rare as we thought it was going to be for us to switch roles. And we got a lot of experience out of it. Like, we really wanted to understand more. What I would say is that there would be a day that could be really hard with navigation. And when Jill was navigating, we'd get close to the end of the day and I'd say, Jill, I have good news for you. You get to drive tomorrow. You know, so there is a nice break there too in switching back and forth, in that we can get that mental relief of not having to be responsible for that and just driving. Now, driving has its own set of stresses mm-hmm. as well, but it's a totally different kind of stress. So I am so grateful for the opportunity to have learned both, and the navigation, doing it again, I would want to just keep on improving.
Okay. Well, I've got one more question kind of for y'all and your personal experience, and then we got to talk about the vehicle, because Hyundai was awesome and offered up their newest activity vehicle, and we'll get to that. But final kind of question, we've danced around it a little bit. Kristen, we'll start with you. When did y'all really feel that y'all started hitting your stride and really grasping at everything that made y'all different but great together? Was that, obviously it wasn't instantaneous. There were learning curves along the way. But when did y'all start thinking, okay, maybe we could do this again next year? I know that was really a strong thought when you got home, though.
Well, this might surprise you, but when I really knew that Jill was going to be an excellent partner and teammate was during training, okay. Because we had gone to a training in April where we trained in the dunes and did some navigation training. But then in August, we went back for training in a different part of California, and we had spent the whole day with the Hyundai engineer, Eric Buxton, who was incredible support to us. And that day, like later in the day, I was like, Jill, I don't know if I am jet lagged. I had just gotten home from Pebble Beach. I was not feeling great. And she's like, come on, you've got to push through. Like, we're doing competition. I was like, I'm trying so hard, but I don't know, something's not right. So I took a COVID test that night. Mm-hmm. And I finished the test and I came out and we were in the hotel room. I said, I have some bad news. I've got COVID and I feel awful. And it was just getting worse and worse. Well, I was stuck in the hotel room for the next 4 days. And Jill was like a mom. She would bring me food. She went and got me medicine. She'd text me during the day and check on me. You know, when I started feeling better, I was able to join navigation training via Zoom, and she ran the maps up to me and came back down. Like, she was so great, and it was so encouraging. Like, I knew then that she'd be a great teammate. So I never questioned that all the way through. I think it was more a matter of us finding like how we worked best together, not whether we were good together, if that makes sense.
Right. Jill, what about you? When did you really feel that click?
I mean, I would agree. Like for me, it was, I would say probably again, pre-Rebel Rally. It was during the training when we shared a two-person tent and she didn't kick me in the head. So that was good. I really appreciated that. That was a win. But no, I mean, it was like how we worked together then with setting up the tent and, you know, figuring out how we could share such a small space together. Because by the way, the idea of sharing space with anybody, including my husband, is really hard. Mm. I'm an introvert. Nobody believes me when they hear me talk and then when they meet me. But I like to be alone. I like my personal space. And so I was really, really concerned going into the first training, knowing we were sharing a two-person tent. And Kristen just made it so easy. And she's so calming and so positive all the time. And I would say that it also helps that she and I speak. If you do the five love languages, we speak the same love language. She's words of affirmation, and so am I. And so when we were able to support and affirm each other, understand. Right. And so, like, if you have love languages together, it can be hard if somebody's, like, setting up the tent for you, but you need to hear, have somebody tell you, you know, what a great job you did setting up the tent. You know, there's, like, a little bit of a disconnect there. So, but yeah, so I would say it was probably pre-training, but during Rebel, I think when we really clicked in was, I think it was day three when they did the on-road enduro, which is basically a road book, and they give you a set of instructions, and it was 10 hours of following instructions in this road book. And in the, was it day five?
I think it was day five.
Cause it was definitely a day that you were navigating and I was driving, and, Bose was one of our sponsors, and they gave us a memory stick with music. Our GPS was disabled, and so we didn't have a radio antenna, and so we put in the memory stick, and I think we got like 90% of our checkpoints that day, and we just had an amazing day, and we were singing and we were talking, and I'm not a music person, but I think we were having conversations like with song titles like the entire day, and to me that was the day we really clicked.
Yeah,
but I knew Kristen would be a great partner from the April training that we did.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so you alluded to it. I can't skip over it now because following along with your journey pre-rally in that doggone tent, what were some of your equipment challenges? and this could even include the vehicle as what we kind of segue into talking about the new Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I have to link video of me trying to put down the tent.
And in your helmet and your boots.
Well, the first one was without the helmet and the boots. It was like just me trying to flip and figure it out. And it was like, it took me 45 minutes and I did not, like, I fast forwarded the video. And so it was like a 5-minute video of me like trying to like fall on the tent and fold the tent. And I mean, I talked to so many people who were like, I watched that over and over again because I laugh every time and it was so hilarious. And I was like, well, you know, I'm glad somebody could laugh. And I laughed too. Yes. I was laughing at myself while I was doing it. I was like, oh, I've got to put this everywhere because it's hilarious. But the tent was definitely a challenge. So one of the things that you have to do during the rally, as Kristen mentioned, you have to get up at 5 a.m. every day. Well, a good day is when you come back to the same base camp, so you don't have to decamp. A bad day, or at least a more difficult day, is when, you know, one person has to plot all of the navigation points while the other person alone is trying to take down the tent, you know, pack up the sleeping bags and the sleeping mats and all of the gear. And by the way, there were a couple of times when I like just did not think that the gear would fit in the truck bed. So that was, you know, decamping was always a challenge. And as much as I loved the Santa Cruz, the truck bed itself was definitely a challenge because it was so compact. Yeah. And we had a 6-person tent. We had, you know, 2 sleeping mats, 2 sleeping bags, 2, fleece, you know, liners, my heated things, yeah, you know, my heated blanket and socks and mittens. You know, we had puffy coats, we had layers, we had clothing bags, we had a jet boil to boil water, we had, you know, I mean, so there's just a lot of, we had a very large tire jack, mm-hmm, we had an air compressor, we had and on and on and on, and trying to fit that all in the truck on a, you know, semi-regular basis was definitely one of the challenges.
Kristen, what about you? What challenges did you come across with equipment, and how did the Santa Cruz perform in your estimation?
I think we had all the right equipment, and Hyundai did an incredible job setting us up as well as our sponsors. You know, like Bose gave us music, mm-hmm, and they gave us some noise canceling headphones that Jill used during the plotting to, you know, to blank out the noise. But we also got a refrigerator from Dometic. They lent us a $1,000 car refrigerator, kept our drinks cold for us. And that was a nice luxury item. It took up some space, but it was a nice luxury item. Our Max tracks worked quite well in the dunes. We found our traction boards, and I'm trying to think that the tent, the first time that I put down the tent. So it's easy. Like you literally pull it out of the package and it pops up. That's so easy. Putting it back together was a whole another story. And the first time I did it, Jill took a video of me. I haven't seen it yet, but I was trying to put it back together and blackmail. I said, I am totally lost here. I don't know what to do. And she had mercy on me and helped me figure out the last steps. But I would have thought I was going to break it the way you have to fold it over. But it was way better than the two-person tent. When it came to the truck itself, though, that Santa Cruz was incredibly capable. It had new skid plates, a lift kit. The Rally Innovations put on the tow points in the front and the lights, and also the rack that we were able to put our shovels, Max Track, and spare tire on. If we wouldn't have that rack, we wouldn't have been able to transport all of our stuff. There's no question. If the only thing that I would add for next year, really, that I can think of, is a heavier duty suspension. If Total Chaos made fabricated suspensions for crossovers, I would 100% recommend them. I think they only really are doing Forerunners, Tacos, and GX460 or LX460s. Lexus, yeah. So they don't do them for us. But if we could get a bigger, beefier suspension, that would have helped us out in some of the rockier areas where we really had to go slow to make sure that we weren't jarring our teeth out.
Or damaging the truck. There was one day we rode along the power lines for like 50 kilometers. And we could not go more than like 15 to 20 miles per hour because if we did, it was just like blah, 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 blah. And so we were protecting ourselves, protecting the truck. But, you know, then we'd look in our rearview mirror and there'd be like a Tacoma or a 4Runner or a Wrangler. And they're flying down the road going like 50 miles an hour. And I'm just like, well, we got to pull over. We got to let them pass. Yeah. And so we ended up at camp last, or at least second to last, or very, very late, several days because we couldn't go faster. And that was definitely, it wasn't our fault. And I mean, it really wasn't the truck's fault either.
Right.
But it was just the situation of what we had and what we were dealing with. And if we had a better suspension, Total Chaos, maybe some Bilstein shocks, I'll throw that word out there. Something like that, that would have helped us go a little bit faster over some of those places. I feel like that would have helped us be a little bit more time efficient as well.
Yeah. The Santa Cruz isn't made to be a 4x4 vehicle in extreme situations, but it handled, I think, way more than people think it can, or even maybe what the designers thought it could.
Yeah. I mean, more than once on comments from videos that I did with Tim on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, people would jump in the comments and like, this is not meant to go off road, you know? And I'm just like, okay, I have a finger for you. Yeah. And you can just pick one. But I'm just like, it is more capable than what, you know, anybody thinks. And yeah, you're not going to do the Rubicon Trail. You're not designed like that. But with the Falcon Tiger and the Gear Off-Road wheels, and there was this great bumper bar that the Rally Innovations put on that protected our bumper and definitely has a couple of dents in now. But I mean, with some of those things that were added to the truck, it was a pretty incredible off-roader. And we were not doing, you know, just a gravel road. Right. We were doing pretty significant challenges.
So, Jill, I'll close out with this to be respectful of your time, because, again, I could keep asking you questions all day long.
And we keep talking.
Right, right. So all three of us, we review vehicles. That's what we do. And you and I, all three of us, have chatted extensively about how we've gotten to the point where we are now. How has 10 days in extreme environments in a vehicle that previously, prior to, I guess, signing up for Rebel and coming in contact with Hyundai had kind of superficial contact with. Now you know the Santa Cruz very intimately. You talked about the size of the truck bed. Granted, y'all were taking a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. What new info have you gleaned? I know y'all said it's way more capable, but what are some new things that kind of surprised you about the truck?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say new things that surprised me, but I will say there are three definite things that I appreciated even more after 10 hours a day and 10 days in this truck. And the first is going to be the turbocharged engine. So we had the top tier trim. And that engine is so peppy and so fast. And when we were doing the on-road stuff, some of our friends were in a vintage Land Rover, and we just like flew past them. And they're like, "Where'd you go?" They got back to camp like a half an hour after us because, you know, on the off-road stuff, they were like flying past us. But then as soon as we got on-road, we were gone. And they were like, "Yeah, we thought we would see you as soon as we got back to the paved highway, but you guys were gone." And I was like, "Yep, turbocharged engine, you know, for the win." So that engine is amazing. The second thing were the seats. Those seats are, I would say, some of the most comfortable seats I've ever experienced in a vehicle. Like, things could have gone completely pear-shaped if those seats were not comfortable. And we talked to some people who had memory foam padding, like, that they were sitting on, and they'd get back to camp every day kind of limping because their seats weren't comfortable. The only thing we had to do to make those better for us is we had to flip the headrests around because we were wearing helmets. And so, like, having the headrest move forward, bump our heads forward while we're wearing helmets would not have been a good thing. But, you know, we flipped the headrest around. Amazing seat comfort. And then the third thing, and I'm probably taking all the words that Kristen is going to say here, because I know she agrees with me on all of these things. So maybe she'll come up with some other things. But the third thing I really, really appreciated was the fact that we had heated and cooled seats. Mm-hmm. So we started with the heated seats in the morning because 32 degrees. Did I mention that I hate the cold? Mm-hmm. Hate the
and
cold.
And you live in
so
Chicago.
Heated seats in the morning. But then it's like 100 degrees in the afternoon because desert. So by, you know, the third time that I get out to examine whether or not we can get over this rock or this ledge or this sandy thing, you're hot and you're sweating. And so you get back into the car and those cooled seats saved the day. So engine, seat comfort, and heated and cooled seats. I will have a hard time doing Rebel without those three things.
Yep. Kristen, what about you?
I would agree, of course, with everything that Jill said. She took all my words. No, I'm just kidding. There's a couple more things I would add. One is small storage spaces. Mm-hmm. They do an amazing job figuring out how to maximize the space of that funky little vehicle. It's such a cool and quirky SUV truck, whatever you want to call it. Trucklet? Mm-hmm. trucklet. I don't know. I love the small storage spaces. And I appreciated the retractable tonneau cover on the bed. And there's plenty of visibility. Mm. We were super comfortable. We were happy with the performance. I never felt like it was going to fall apart in any way. And I think they have packed an incredible amount of value into this car. And we picked this car and we picked Hyundai specifically for our first rally because we wanted to do something different. And a little bit of a challenge in its own way. Hyundai had never sponsored a vehicle in the rally. And nobody had put the Santa Cruz to the test in that way. And we did. The pictures and the video are stunning. We'd find ourselves in a lake bed and be the only vehicle for miles. You know, a dry lake bed. And the instructions would say, you know, go 133 degrees to your next checkpoint. And we'd get out and use our compass and find it and nail it. And like, there's such a good feeling, and that feeling, you know, extended to each of us, but also to the vehicle. There's three people, well, not people, but three teammates, me, Jill, and the Santa Cruz, which we named Sandy because it was so good on the sand.
All right. All right. Well, Kristen, for people to keep up with you, your thoughts, and everything that you do in the automotive space, where are the best places for our listeners to find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram under Kristen V. Shaw. And you can also find me on Instagram with Drive Mode Show. And then you'll find my work in Popular Science and U.S. News, Forbes, and Edmunds. Yep.
And we'll put links to all that down in the show notes. Same for you, Jill. Where can our listeners find you?
So on social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I do daily videos on TikTok, much to my chagrin. But you can find me at Jill Simonello. So just name all one word. Tried to keep it as simple as possible. There's a lot of eyes there. So Jill Simonello, and a lot of my long form videos and then written stories appear on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. So YouTube is Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, and then the website is pickuptrucktalk.com. Yep. So that's where the majority of my work goes.
And again, we will put links to that stuff down in the show notes for those who peruse that section of their podcast app. I just want to thank y'all again so much for, one, being really good friends and keeping up with me and coming on the show, but just sharing with our listeners your experience and what you've been through. It has been a blast catching up with y'all.
Thanks, Corey. It's been an incredible experience. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having us. We really enjoyed talking with you. Appreciate your friendship and any opportunity we have to, you know, sing the praises of Hyundai, Rebel, and all of our sponsors. We are happy to do that. So we appreciate the opportunity.
So I just want to say a huge thank you to both Kristen and Jill for coming on this week and sharing their experience. As I've mentioned, I've had both of them on individually to talk about their personal journeys and stories through the automotive industry. I will also link both of those episodes down in the show notes. And I don't even believe we mentioned their team name here as they conquered the Rebel for their first time, but they were Team Brute Squad. And there's a whole story behind that we didn't even get to. So it is just proof that I could have kept talking with them all day long. We were just really getting into the vehicle itself and how the vehicle performed and learning how a vehicle that most people kind of laugh at in the off-road community, because it is a glorified car in the most rudimentary sense of the design of it. But at the same point, to echo their sentiments, that little Santa Cruz was way more competent and able to perform than most people give it credit for. So huge shout out to Jill and Kristen for signing Hyundai up, getting them on board, and testing out and putting the Santa Cruz through its paces to show the world that it truly is a very capable vehicle. I am so grateful that they took time out of their busy schedules, because now they are catching up on all the work that they missed after being out for 10 days, and actually a little bit more than 10 days of work while they were participating in the Rebel and all of the surrounding events. I'm just very grateful that they squeezed me in, and I'm grateful for their friendship. They are two very amazing people. I am so grateful just to have them as people to go and talk to as I continue to grow what we do here at GT Garage Talk. And speaking of which, you know where to find us on all things. Head on over to gtgaragetalk.com or Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. All things at GT Garage Talk. Until next time, gearheads. Bye.